Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. This week, the government responds to Parliament's streaming report. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
That was quite drawn out. I mean, I know we've been away for quite some time.
Hello, Chris.
But I don't think you need to draw out the hello quite that long. Hello there.
Hello. Hello. I haven't seen you in a while.
No.
Because we haven't spoken since last time we did a podcast.
Not at all. I mean, actually, I mean, obviously,
maybe that's true.
We digitally speak in text form, but actually looking at you, I possibly haven't seen you since we last recorded a podcast.
Yeah, that is actually true, isn't it?
It's an embarrassing admission about the teamwork agenda at CMU, that we slack each other every day, but we prefer not to actually talk to each other.
Unless, you know, we have to do it.
We did actually talk to each other during the summer break when we noticed that there was a new button within Slack via which you could talk rather than type, and we tested that out.
Oh, yeah. We had a conversation about how that was going to be incredibly useful. And then we've never used it.
We've never used it since testing it.
Yeah.
So, hello there. How are you?
I'm all right. Yeah. How are you?
Did you have a good summer 2021?
Was there a summer 2021?
Do you mean that from a weather perspective or a time of existence perspective?
No, a weather perspective. I had a very nice summer, despite there not being any summery weather until now, when it's quite summery.
I'm sure we had lots of summery weather this summer, but I don't really remember.
There was very little, but I'm not sure anyone has come here to hear us discussing the weather or weather of the past.
No, I'm sure they're actually tuning in to find out what we have been up to over the last couple of months since the last Setlist podcast, all the exciting places we've been and events we've attended and festivals and gigs and concerts we've enjoyed. Although, actually, I think between us, given that COVID-y stuff is still kind of only just disappearing, we could probably count the places we've been and the events we've been to on one hand, I'm guessing.
Yeah, but I mean, that's pretty much true for me all the time anyway. I've been to at least one gig, maybe two. I saw the surfing magazines and I saw Simon Amstel, although he didn't sing.
No, I heard on the grapevine that you'd seen Simon Amstel. I actually knew that.
Everyone's talking about it.
Meanwhile, I must admit that in the last couple of weeks, I have been able to leave Leytonstone, to leave London, to even leave the United Kingdom, because the COVID rules have relaxed enough for that. But listeners to the podcast should know that, because actually we returned from our summer break last week with that special Setlist style discussion that we had at the Spot Festival in Aarhus in Denmark. So hopefully people enjoyed that, although at the same time, I hope it didn't raise expectations too much for our usual editions of Setlist, because there are going to be a lot more usual editions of Setlist, even if we do more of those guest panel editions at conferences in the months ahead. And then the week before that, I actually went to the Vilvelvest Festival in Bergen in Norway. So I guess I shouldn't be moaning too much about being stranded in Leytonstone all summer, although I was stranded in Leytonstone all summer, but at least travelling and events and gigs are now starting to properly resume.
Yeah, but that's not what we're here to talk about in our weekly look back at some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last week. Just realised I missed that bit of the script. Because we're going to discuss something else. This week we're going to focus on one story because there's a lot to say about it. And that is the British government's response to Parliament's Economics of Streaming report. Listeners who are rejoining us should remember that we talked quite a lot about that Economics of Streaming report before our summer break, which was published by the UK Parliament's Digital, Culture, Media and Sports Select Committee back in July and called for a complete reset of the music streaming market.
Yes, and as we explained earlier in the year, multiple times, I am sure, as we were discussing that report and then the inquiry and the oral hearings and everything that's preceded it, select committees are basically committees of backbench MPs in the British Parliament. They don't actually have any powers. They can't tell the government what to do. That's not the purpose of select committees. What select committees are there to do is to scrutinise government, to scrutinise the decisions that government make, but also to investigate what is happening within certain industries or certain parts of society and to make recommendations to the relevant departments of government as to changes that could be made, whether that's changes to government policy or actually changes to the law. So, the Select Committee did this inquiry on music streaming, published this big long report that had lots of recommendations. Some of those were recommendations for the music industry itself. Some were recommendations for things the government could do. Some were actually recommendations for changing mainly copyright law to address some of the issues that have been raised during the inquiry. So all of those recommendations were made back in July. And basically, when a select committee publishes a report like this, the government is obliged to respond. And so within a couple of months after the report comes out, the government has to say, OK, we've read your report and this is what we think. And I guess the government can do one of three things. It can either say, everything you recommended is brilliant and we are going to do all of that, or it can say, everything you recommended was a nonsense and we're going to ignore it. Or it could say, you've raised some interesting points. We think we need to consider and debate and research this further. And in a way, because the Economics of Streaming Inquiry had so many recommendations, actually last week the government did a combination of all of those things, depending on which of the recommendations you're looking at.
Yeah, and although the government called the report a key moment for the music industry, actually, ministers accepted very few of the committee's recommendations outright. However, it will now convene what it's calling a contact group and two working groups to further consider some of the legislative proposals, as well as the transparency and data issues that the committee raised. And this, I think, is probably the big thing. It's also asked the Competition and Markets Authority to consider an investigation into the dominance of the major music companies, so Warner, Sony and Universal, in the music industry.
Yeah, and getting the CMA to basically investigate or at least do a study into the music rights business in the UK and the dominance of the majors, that was one of the recommendations of the Select Committee in their report. And it was also one of the big asks, particularly of the Ivors Academy, the organisation that represents songwriters during the streaming inquiry itself. And although various concerns have been raised across the music community by indies, by artists, by songwriters and by managers about the dominance that the big three, the majors, have over the music rights industry, I guess the Ivors Academy was calling for that CMA study or investigation for one very specific reason, which relates to the way that streaming monies are shared out between the two different music copyrights, the recording rights and the song rights. Because, as regular listeners will know, streaming is a revenue share business. The monies get shared out between the streaming services themselves and then the record industry that control the recording rights and the music publishing sector that controls the song rights. And under the current system, of the money that comes in, approximately 50 to 55% will end up with the recording rights, so that's the record industry. 10 to 15% is then shared with the publishers and the societies and the songwriters on the song side. And there are plenty of people who argue that although that split that sees the recording getting so much more than the song kind of replicates what happened with CDs and vinyl records, actually compared to a physical product, the song gets a bigger share. However, plenty of songwriters would argue they should be getting a significantly bigger slice of the digital pie. But one of the reasons why they don't is because the major music groups are big players in both recordings and publishing. So Sony, Universal and Warner, they have big record companies, they control a lot of sound recordings, they have big music publishing businesses, they control a lot of song catalogues. And because of the way the music industry works, conventions in the business are that when a label signs an artist, the record deal they agree will probably allow the label, for various reasons, to keep the majority of the money that comes in when the sound recordings are exploited. Whereas, with publishing deals, the songwriter will get the majority of the money that comes in when the songs are exploited. So the argument goes, if you are sitting at the top of Sony, Universal or Warner, you would much prefer for most of the money to come in through the recorded music side of your business, where you get to keep most of it, rather than the publishing side of your business, where you have to pay most of it to the writer. And therefore, the majors have a vested interest in the status quo, where much more streaming money goes to recordings than songs, And that is stopping there from being a significant reslicing of the digital pie, is one argument that has been presented. And therefore, the songwriting community, with the Ivors Academy speaking up for them as part of the inquiry, wanted this competition investigation to see whether the majors being dominant not only in the record industry over recorded music, but also in the music publishing sector over songs, whether that dominance is skewing the market in general, but particularly in relation of how streaming monies are shared out between songs and recordings. So that was a big ask of the Ivors Academy, but other groups like the Musicians Union, the FAC, the MMF, lots of groups representing creators, and indeed the indie sector, are supportive of this idea that there should be a CMA investigation. So the fact that that was a big recommendation in the report was important, and the fact that the government basically embraced that recommendation, sort of, was a standout part of the government's response last week.
Yes, although it was basically supportive of that, the government said that it was really up to the CMA to decide whether or not it did anything. In its response, it said, "As an independent competition authority, it is for the CMA to decide how best to use its resources to deliver its objectives in making markets work well for consumers and businesses." Although it then added, "While remaining mindful of this, DCMS Minister for State of Digital and Culture, Caroline Dynage MP, and BEIS Minister for Science, Research and Innovation, Amanda Soloway MP, have written to Dr. Andrea Costelli, the Chief Executive of the CMA, to request that the CMA gives its consideration to the committee's recommendation."
Now, it remains to be seen how the CMA itself responds to all of that, although quite a few people do seem to think that some sort of investigation into the dominance of the majors within the music rights business probably will happen. Actually, the CMA is already doing a little bit of work in that domain as a result of its investigation into Sony's purchase of AWOL, which kind of ramped up over the summer break as well. So we will see, I guess, whether or not there will be a wider study on the dominance of the majors. As I say, that was the big ask during the parliamentary inquiry from the songwriter community, and particularly the Ivors Academy. Meanwhile, the Musicians Union, who worked very closely with the Ivors on campaigning around all of this, their big ask, which, as it happens, was also the big ask by Tom Gray and his Broken Record campaign, they wanted the CMA investigation as well, but their main ask of the parliamentary inquiry was that this thing called performer equitable remuneration be applied to streams. And that was discussed a lot in the oral hearings as part of the parliamentary inquiry. And in its report, the Select Committee said that there should be ER on streams. Now, we've discussed this so many times on the podcast that, I mean, unless this is literally your first time tuning in, you must know that ER is a system that already exists in copyright law that applies when recorded music is broadcast on radio or TV or when it's played in public. And basically what it means is when money comes into the record industry from broadcasters and from pubs, clubs, bars, cafes that use recorded music, because of this principle of performer ER, which sits in copyright law, that money gets split automatically at industry standard rates. So some of it goes to the copyright owners, which will usually be record labels, and some of it goes to all of the performers who appear on the track, the main artist and the session musicians. And that's the system that currently applies with radio and with public performance, etc. It does not currently apply when music is streamed. So on the streaming side, money comes in from the streaming services to record companies and music distributors, who then share that money with artists subject to contract. So the artist might get most of that money, if that's what the contract says, but a conventional record deal will usually pay the artist a minority of that money. If it's an old record deal, it may be a very small minority of that money. And lots of artists and musicians and managers of artists and musicians argue that at the moment, many artists are not getting a fair share of the money that flows in from streaming on the recording side, and that the best way to solve it, this is certainly the position that the MU and the Broken Record campaign and others took during the inquiry, the best way to make sure that artists and musicians get a fairer or a bigger cut of streaming money is to say, well, rather than what they earn being entirely dependent on the deals they negotiated with record labels and music distributors, possibly deals they negotiated 50 years ago, let's have an ER system. So some or maybe all of the artist share of streaming would flow through the collective licensing system. So that would be PPL in the UK. So they would get paid at industry standard rates, not subject to a record deal or a distribution deal. That was the big ask, as I say, of the MU, the Broken Record Campaign, and some others who submitted documents to the inquiry and spoke at the inquiry. The Select Committee backed that idea. Their recommendation in their report was that UK copyright law be amended so that ER be applied to the so-called making available element of the copyright, specifically the sound recording copyright, which therefore would mean ER was due on streams. There's actually a private members bill currently working its way through Parliament that's been proposed by a member of the Culture Select Committee, Kevin Brennan, which aims to do the same thing. So I guess the question was, when the government put out its response from an MU broken record perspective, what do they say about ER?
Well, the government said in its response, many testimonies to the inquiry noted that ER on streams might not be in the interests of all performers and could result in lower revenues for some. For example, some featured artists may receive better revenue under the current arrangement than they might under an equitable remuneration right. This suggests that changes could have significant impacts which are difficult to predict and must be investigated and better understood.
And to be fair to the government, that is true. Some people within the music industry have been critical of the proposal that ER be applied to streams. In the main, the record labels, both major and indie, are against that proposal. But even within the artist community and the management community, there are some people who say, on one level, ER seems like a nice, easy solution that would get artists a bigger cut of the digital pie, but it's not entirely clear what ER on streams means. How would it work? What would be the admin costs at PPL? And if you are a younger artist who has done a modern record deal where the terms are almost certainly more favourable, particularly if you're working with an indie, for example, or maybe as an artist you've set up your own label and you're working with a distributor. Maybe you are self-releasing in a DIY way and you're working with a TuneCore type distributor. And in those latter scenarios, it may well be that by the time the admin costs of ER are taken into account, plus the fact that as a featured artist or main artist, you will be sharing the ER money with session musicians, you might actually end up being worse off. So whereas sometimes the idea of applying ER to streams is presented as a way of getting money off the labels and giving it to artists. And while in some cases that is kind of what would happen, in that the label would see a smaller cut and the artist would see a bigger cut, depending on the current deal, there are examples where actually artists themselves would be losers on an ER system. And so what some people have been saying is, well, some people say ER actually is not a good system and therefore we shouldn't do it, oppose it outright. Within the artist and management community, I think it's more there are potential issues with ER, so we need to consider what those issues mean, how ER might work, who the winners and losers within the artist community might be, what it would mean to those artists and labels who've done more innovative partnerships in more recent years. Basically, it needs more research, some people said as part of the inquiry. And that's basically the position that the government has taken. They're not saying that they outright oppose the idea of ER on streams. They're saying that the idea needs more consideration. And therefore, they are planning on instigating a committee and instigating some research to do that further investigation. Although that does suggest that the government, which currently has quite a healthy majority in the House of Commons in Parliament, will vote against the aforementioned private members bill being proposed by Kevin Brennan, a Labour MP, later this year, which probably means the chances of that private members bill going through are quite slim. Although we will see in that bill one proposal for quite how ER on streams might work, which can be part of any future government-led debate on this particular issue.
Now, you mentioned that committee. That's what the government is calling its music industry contact group, which it's inviting various senior representatives from across the music industry to join in order to discuss not just ER, but various other proposed changes to copyright law that came up during the inquiry and fed into that Economics of Streaming report. And ministers will also commission various pieces of research to understand the practicalities and potential impact of each of those proposed reforms. The government actually already published a piece of research in this area last week, although not off the back of the Economics of Streaming report. It was actually commissioned a couple of years ago. That's called Creators' Earnings in the Digital Age. And so anything this contact group discusses will come off the back of both the Economics of Streaming report and this new piece of research, along with all this other future research they're planning to do. Ministers say that they will also pursue further educational initiatives around music rights, building on the Music Copyright Explained guide that the Intellectual Property Office published in partnership with CMU Insights, don't know who they are, earlier this year.
Yeah, that's a good guide. You should all download it.
Alongside the contact group, two technical stakeholder working groups will also be formed, one focused on contract transparency and the other on music rights data. Both of those have been repeatedly raised as key issues in digital music, with a lack of transparency affecting the ability of artists and songwriters to truly understand how the streaming business actually works, and music rights data issues stopping music writers, especially songwriters, from getting paid.
So basically, to summarise the government's response to the Economics of Streaming inquiry, in the main, on most of the recommendations, not all of them, but on most of the recommendations, they are kind of saying, we basically agree, certainly, that the issues you have raised are legitimate. And in many cases, that the solutions you proposed are definitely worth considering. But in nearly every case, more research, more investigation, more discussion is required. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because the cynical CMU journalist in me kind of wants to say, right, so we had a year of the parliamentary inquiry with lots of things being written and lots of people speaking and lots of research and lots of debate. Meanwhile, as you say, this new report that the government's also just put out, which they've been working on for a while now, has involved lots of discussion and lots of debate. And then all of this was informed by lots of discussion and debate and research within the music industry, not least the Dissecting Digital Dollar work that we at CMU have been doing with and for the Music Managers Forum for 5 years now. And on the back of all of that debate and discussion, the government's solution is what we definitely need is more debate and discussion. So it does almost feel like the government's summary is, well done for doing all that debating and discussing. We agree. We need to do more debating and discussing. Let's have a debate. So that's my cynical response. Although, kinda, it's sort of the right response, because I think a lot of the bold recommendations in the parliamentary inquiry report, it was great to see those recommendations there in black and white. And I think some of the recommendations which were more aimed at the music industry than anything else are things that the industry definitely needs to embrace with some urgency. But some of the other bold proposals, particularly those around copyright reform, well, we said this before, because at one point the ER solution was being presented as, it's really simple. We'd make a minor change to copyright law. ER kicks in, artists make more money, simple. But because this is music copyright, it's a simple solution that's incredibly complicated. And it raises so many questions. And a lot of the bolder recommendations, particularly around reforming copyright law, there are actually other questions which haven't really been addressed. So I think the government is right that where there is definitely a need for action, we're not quite ready, particularly when it comes to rewriting law, to go through with that action. But I think one of the challenges now for particularly those groups in the music industry that represent artists and songwriters and musicians and producers and their managers, there is now the challenge of keeping the impetus going. That the government is probably right that in order to enact on the recommendations in the Select Committee's report, more talking, more research needs to be done. But how can we keep momentum going so we aren't just talking about this for another 5 years and then in 5 years' time, the digital market will be so different to the digital market today that all of these conversations become irrelevant. To be fair to the government, they did sort of set some deadlines in saying we're going to have this committee, it's going to meet in the autumn, these working groups will meet here, they will report within 6 months, within 12 months. So there are some deadlines in there. So I guess the aim of the MU and Ivers and the Broken Record Campaign and the MMF and the FAC, etc., is to keep that momentum, force the government and the industry to stick to those deadlines. And while we do need more investigation and more debate, that we don't just spend the next 5 years doing that, debating and investigating. And this doesn't end up a little bit like, do you remember 10 years ago when the music industry successfully got free strikes of kind for anti-piracy in the Digital Economy Act? And we were going to force ISPs to start sending out warning letters to infringers and file sharers, ultimately with some sanction if people continued to pirate music. And then, even though the law got changed, that was passed to a committee. And I mean, it took years and years and years and years before anything actually happened, by which point the conversation had kind of moved on and some pretty lackluster warning letters were sent out. We don't want that to happen. I say we, the artist community, the songwriter community, the managers need to keep the momentum going.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, obviously, yeah, the concern is that this just sort of slowly fizzles out. Although it is an area where I think there are kind of eyes on this around the world. People want to know what's happening with it. And I see this reported in kind of the American music business media. And so there is an interest in it. And at a point when the UK is trying to be this new global power that it's currently in most areas failing to be, this is an area where maybe it could kind of lead the conversation on how copyright issues are dealt with in the digital age. And so maybe it would be a good thing for the government to kind of be really proactive on this, which probably means they won't be and they'll mess it up. But who knows?
And if I was to put my cynical journalist hat back on, maybe...
Did you take it off?
I did. I took it off. I put it on the table over there. But I'm putting it back on now. Maybe the lobbyists and the public affairs people of the major record companies, maybe they're thinking, well, this all came to a head in 2020... after years of debates and discussions behind the scenes because of the COVID pandemic, because so many artists lost their other revenue streams like live and merchandise and royalties that come in from live and public performance. And once everyone's touring again, and once those live revenues return and the merchandise revenues go back up and the other royalties start coming into play, maybe the artists will become less concerned about all of this. Maybe they'll just be too busy to be campaigning about it. And maybe all of this will go away. I don't know. Maybe that is something that has been floated in the boardrooms of some or all of the major record companies. But to make sure that doesn't happen, the MUs and the FACs and the MMFs and the Ivers of this world and Tom Gray's Broken Record Campaign really need to make sure that the government, as you say, stick to the kind of deadlines they've set themselves, spin it as an opportunity of Great Britain leading the way, because that's what the current government likes. And maybe some of the reforms proposed in that report might actually become a reality in the UK and elsewhere.
Yeah, well, certainly, I mean, Helene Linval on last week's live episode did say that it had really helped that artists had had time to stop and look at their digital music revenues and what income was they were getting from that, because everything else just disappeared. And so, yeah, what you don't want to see now is a reversal of that, where everyone forgets about it and the momentum's lost. But I think there is quite a lot of momentum behind this. There will be pressure on the government to keep this up. So we'll see. And obviously, there's a lot of different music industry organisations interested in this. They all put out statements of response to the government's response last week. And I mean, there's a lot of them. We're not going to run through them here now, but we will link to them all in the show notes for this episode. In summary, they basically all say, it's great that the government said this, and we're really glad that they agree with everything we said.
Yeah, because in some ways the government's position was a bit of a compromise position. A, there was a pick and mix of recommendations in the Select Committee's report to start with, so even though some of the recommendations, particularly around copyright law reform, most of the labels will oppose, some of the other stuff around algorithms and piracy and safe harbour, the labels support just as much as everyone else in the music community. And also because the government were like, these recommendations need more work, they need more consideration, it did mean that everybody on all sides of this debate were able to find something positive in the government's response. I guess whether or not that positivity is justified will depend on where we go next. And of course, I mean, concurrent to all of this, a chunk of the recommendations in the Select Committee's report, and also the MMF and the FAC put out a white paper recently, and I helped run a webinar about that with the Music Managers Forum and Future Artists Coalition's position. And in that, and indeed other organisations have done this too, some of the demands are aimed at government and at parliament, but some of the demands are aimed at industry as well. And it's whether or not initiatives can be forced through on a voluntary basis probably starting an independent community, because that's usually where these things start, and then trying to force the majors to maybe meet artists and songwriters halfway on some of this stuff. Maybe voluntary agreements within the industry can be reached. Although I think MMF, FAC, MU Ivers would say we need the government pressure and potentially the threat of a change to copyright law down the line to force those people within the industry who are less willing to compromise to at least come to the negotiating table in a proper way.
Yeah, so in one way, that rounds up the economics of streaming inquiry and report, and that's all done and dusted. In another, hey, it's just getting started. So look out for yet more discussion of all this on future episodes of Setlist. We have a whole timeline of all our coverage of this story on our website, which we will link to in the show notes, which, as ever, you can find either in your podcast player now or at setlistpodcast.com. You might also like to buy yourself a book called Dissecting the Digital Dollar, which explains all of this amazingly well, like so well. Just, I've still not read it, but really, really well. I will read it one day.
Buy the book and download a copy of the Music Copyright Explained guide. I think those are the two main self-serving plugs to come out of this particular discussion.
Yes, but that is all we've got time for on this edition of Setlist. As I say, go and check out the show notes if you want to find out more about anything we've discussed here today. Before we go, I've got another podcast recommendation for you, which is a recent episode of The Verge's Decoder podcast, where they had songwriter Charlie Harding on as a guest, and they discussed why it's becoming more common for artists to get songwriting credits for not co-writing a song, but for one of their old songs sounding a bit like a new pop song. So why that's happening, what's led to that. So they go through the whole Blurred Lines case and the impact that had. And they particularly focus on Olivia Rodrigo, whose album has just kind of relentlessly been accused of ripping off other artists, quite unfairly, probably. And it sort of breaks down songwriting processes and the difference between sampling and interpolation and just plagiarism. So it gets really deep into stuff that we've discussed in the podcast before. And I think if you like this show, you will enjoy that episode. So go and check it out. I will put a link to that in the show notes as well. But before you go and check that out, just remember to subscribe to this show so that you get episodes delivered to you automatically every week, because we're back now. Yes, we are. Every week we're going to be here now until Christmas probably, but that's plenty of episodes to keep you going. So you want to get them coming automatically, and don't forget to rate and review and all of that to help other people find the show, or just tell people about the show. That is a good way of doing it. If you've got anything you want to tell us, ask us, or just a picture to send us of a thing you found in a hedge, email us setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Malt and Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.